Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's Politics Monday, and with 57 days before Election Day, we look at a group of voters who may have a profound impact on the outcome. Young people. According to research by the Berkeley Institute of Young Americans, young people had a, quote, broad, decisive impact on the midterm elections of 2018 and 2022, as well as the last presidential election, and that influence is likely to be felt again this year. The study also finds young people, regardless of political affiliation, believe our society is fractured and that government should play a role in fixing it. Both political parties are doing whatever they can to woo these young people, especially in swing states like ours. So this hour, we take a closer look at Gen Z, the oldest of whom is 27 years old, at what has shaped their experiences and influenced their politics. We're joined by WFAE political reporter Steve Harrison. Scott Huffman is director of the Center for Public Opinion and Policy Research and professor of political science at Winthrop University, where he supervises the Winthrop poll. And for a Gen Z voter perspective, we turn to Jasmine Abney, HBCU and campus program manager with Common Cause North Carolina. Good morning to you all. Welcome.
Good morning.
So, Jasmine, I'm starting with you. You're with Common Cause. That's a nonpartisan organization. But before we talk about the organization and that aspect of your life, let's talk about the generation of which you are a member, Gen Z. Every generation experiences the world differently and lives through moments that define who they are. Gen Z grew up with smartphones. They're the first digital natives in the world. Social media certainly is ubiquitous in their has been ubiquitous in their lives, and it played a huge role in how they interact with each other and how they engage in self-expression. Where would you rank those things with some of the other events or trends that have shaped your life and that of other Gen Zers?
Absolutely. I think our access to the internet, not just to technology, but to the internet, is the full backdrop, not only for the way we engage with each other, but the way that we see the world, because we have such instant access to everything all the time. And that's all we've ever known. I think when we talk about what politicizes Gen Z and what shapes our knowing of the world, the first president that many of us remember is President Barack Obama. Many of us were politicized through BLM and police brutality protests, whether you were for or against. That was some of the first social uprising that we really engaged in. For us, the Great Recession, our memory is like super long lines at gas stations that had the cheapest gas. And so when it comes to voting, we're in a whole new world. When it comes to politics, we're in a whole new world, but we're thinking of it in this microcosm of like, what can I see? Like, what is immediately around me? It isn't necessarily informed by textbooks, but the snapshots that we've seen on Instagram and on the app formerly known as Twitter over the years.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Jasmine, but I'm going to wager that you don't really have vivid memories of 9/11.
I was 1 year old.
See?
So no memories.
I rest my case. Scott, the oldest member of Gen Z is 27. You teach a lot of these young people, and you just told me a few minutes ago that you have daughters who are members of that generation. So if the oldest member of Gen Z is 27, that means they were 21. When and if they voted in 2018, and only a small number could participate then because the youngest would have been 6 in 2018. As they have gotten older and as these folks have begun living their adult lives and participating in elections, Scott, do we have any details about their politics?
Well, they tend to lean a little more Democratic. Gen Z is the most racially and ethnically diverse generation that we've ever had in America. They're about 41 million strong, I think, last time I checked. The question is, will this slightly Democratic leaning, much more demographically heterogeneous group turn out in large numbers? And in 2020, they turned out a little over 50%, which is good, but it's still lower than the rest of America. especially when those folks 60 and older turned out to the tune of 78%, almost 80%. So they, you know, politically, they are a little Democratic leaning. Their issues that they're concerned about are very similar to what people say, but the particulars within those issues are different. So Gen Z might say about the economy and, you know, somebody closer to retirement age, such as, you know, getting there myself, you know, I might worry about the stock market and how my 401k is doing. A lot of Gen Zers don't even conceive of the idea of retirement yet because they can't afford the college debt they're going into. And they can't afford a lot of things. So even though inflation, for example, is actually going down overall, the parts of that are of inflation that are still high are the things Gen Z is experiencing, such as housing, food, medical care, and education.
Which will shape their political point of view, consciously or subconsciously. And Steve, this is a large and growing segment of our population. Both political parties are wooing this group of the population. How are they going about it?
It's interesting. The Harris campaign has, I saw a link where they are now, you know, they're trying to meet young voters where they are, and they're pushing out videos on Instagram. They're doing like targeted in North Carolina and the swing states, targeted videos on college campuses, talking about healthcare, for instance. And one of the big messages is, look, the Obamacare, you can stay on your parents' insurance until you're 25. I believe it's 25. And, you know, the Biden campaign, well, President Biden and now the Harris campaign, you know, I think they've been thinking about young voters for a long time. I mean, the student debt relief that President Biden rolled out a couple of years ago was clearly targeted toward young voters. They have pushed abortion really high as really arguably their biggest issue. The president is kind of very focused, a little frantic, arguably, to get a ceasefire in Gaza, which is another huge issue for young voters. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Democratic Party clearly has them front of mind.
You mentioned their use of social media to get to these people. Jeff Jackson, a congressman from North Carolina, is probably one of the great users of TikTok in Congress. He's legendary for that, Steve. I can't think of anybody. I mean, there are other people in the Democratic Party who use it, OAC. Is it OAC? Ocasio-Cortez? Or AOC. She uses it. What about on the Republican side? Are Republicans being effective in using social media and those various platforms?
You know, I would say that President Trump has used it really effectively for the last 8 years on Twitter. I mean, a very different sort of social media use where he just fires off these blunt messages and what used to be 150 characters and now more. But yes, I mean, I think in general, the Republican Party is behind in terms of reaching young people through social media. But they are trying. But again, I think it's just Gen Z voters, you know, polls show they are overwhelmingly backing President Harris. And now more so, you know, she has expanded her lead among Gen Z voters as opposed to what President Biden had.
So, Jasmine, if you want to reach these people on social media, which are the platforms to use? I'm just curious.
I think with the shift in the changing of the rules on the app formerly known as Twitter, Instagram and TikTok have really taken off. We're seeing a lot of short form content. Like kids want to see, kids, my peers want to see.
You were right the first time.
We want to see those short videos. Give us 25 seconds, 30 seconds of content and then let us scroll on. So TikTok is taking the crown on this one with Instagram Reels pretty close behind.
I want to come back to that in a little while. I mentioned that the research shows that members of this generation, Gen Z, believe society is fractured and that government has a role to play in fixing it. These young people have lived through and had their school experiences influenced, shaped by the pandemic. They've had to worry about school shootings. They've grown up at a time when 200 years of political norms have come under attack and political polarization has become endemic. How would you say that those experiences have shaped their politics, Jasmine?
I think they have all been massive containers, which our political action has been held by. I think for us, sometimes we don't realize how deeply we've been affected by the news that's happening across the country, because we see it again on Instagram or Twitter for 30 seconds. And when we sit back and we're like, oh my gosh, in my classrooms, we had to talk about throwing books at an intruder or moving desks or what entrances would be safe. These voters are taking that into the booth with them, even when it isn't always at the forefront of their mind, because realistically, our politicians aren't talking very robustly about gun reform or about the issues that matter to us. And so they're like, okay, what gets me closest? That's the thought. What gets me closest to safety? What gets me closest to calm? What gets me closest to security?
Scott, you've not only been teaching members of this generation, you've been teaching them in a political science class setting. So I'm curious to hear your impressions of all the things that I talked about and how that has influenced what they talk about, what they are concerned about in these political science classes that you teach.
Well, you know, first let me, for folks that think, oh, well, there's going to be selection bias because the people who choose to take political science classes are going to be more engaged in the topic. And while that is a bit true, in South Carolina, we have what's called the REACH Act, which requires every student to take a class where they have to read the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, 5 minimum Federalist Papers, the Emancipation Proclamation, and some document relating to the African-American struggle for civil rights. So you have to do that in order to graduate. So my intro American government class, which meets that, I am getting a broad swath of students, not just the self-selected ones. And many of them come in having taken, government classes in high school or social science classes in high school that really didn't dig in depth. They were classes very often that were aimed at checking boxes in, you know, large tests that they had to take in order to graduate or the school to get funding or whatever. So they're not as engaged on the issues. But I've seen that over all the decades of teaching. I've been teaching at the college level for 30 years. Students don't know who you would call to fill a pothole. They don't know it's not your U.S. senator. They are engaged. They are engaged in a very different way than they were 30 years ago, as Jasmine very eloquently pointed out, that they are getting their information from wholly different sources, but they are still concerned. They are still thinking, I want to make this world a better place, and I don't know how. And that's the key to getting them engaged, is learning how.
And you mentioned that these young people, they're growing, they're influenced by things that affect their daily lives. For instance, the disappearance or the alleged disappearance of the American dream, the inability to buy a house that some people think they will not be able to do, or they won't be as prosperous as their parents and grandparents were. But I have some polling that says that may not be the case. We'll get to that later. But these people do have student loans. They're also the generation most affected, I think, by the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Do we know how those things have shaped and influenced them in the ballot box? Jasmine. In the voting booth, I should say.
We have very little, or I have very little knowledge of actually how these students are going to vote. Because the problem is, are we going to turn out? Like, that is kind of the thinking in the work that I do every day. Are they going to turn out? Are they going to go? We know they're interested in having their rights brought back to them. We know that they want abortion rights, but they don't know who to vote for in order to obtain that.
I'll come back to Scott with that question after the break, and also Steve, who spoke with some UNC Charlotte students not too long ago about these issues. We'll get into that as well as we continue to talk about the political influences influencing Gen Z. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaOfSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks and Politics Monday on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org, listener-funded. Steve Harrison is with us. He's our political reporter here at WFAE. Dr. Scott Hoffman, professor of political science and director of the Center for Public Opinion and Policy Research at Winthrop University, and Jasmine Abney, HBCU and Campus Program Director for Common Cause, North Carolina. Scott, I asked Jasmine a question about all these things that have affected the lives of Gen Z, which is what we're talking about today. They have student loans. They're most likely to be affected by the overturning of Roe v. Wade. They have concerns about their ongoing prosperity, their ability to buy a home, et cetera, et cetera. How have those things influenced them, and how do you think it will impact them? Do they see a connection between those things and voting?
They do see a connection between those things and government. And very often, unfortunately, that leads to a lack of efficacy. Efficacy is the sense that you matter, that you can make a difference. And so for a lot of, you know, surveys of not just Gen Z, but, you know, under 40, a lot of these folks feel disconnected from government. You can look at polling, especially of Gen Zers, but of all younger adults, and many of them are worried about the future of democracy and are worried about whether or not government can fix what is wrong with it. However, a large proportion of them, a plurality of them, do believe government can step in and deal with these things. But one of the problems that we see with all of these polls, including the ones I do, is that we can't dig into whether or not people actually understand the connections between their problems and the government. You know, I'll often dig into, you know, asking people, do you know what things actually contribute to the price of gas directly? And the ideas that coming out there, you know, people think the president can turn off or on a spigot and gas prices shoot up or down. And of course, that's incorrect. So the connection between their concerns and what government can actually do about it, that disconnect goes across generations.
I'm not sure very many of us understand the connection between the president and what the president can do and what happens in the economy. And I'm not sure there is a connection, quite honestly, except a psychological one. But that's a show for another day. Steve, you spoke with students at UNC Charlotte earlier this year about some of these issues. What did you learn?
Yeah, I was speaking in a political science class back in the spring, and it was really interesting. The kind of apathy toward President Biden at the time was really pretty stunning. I have not spoken with him since. I assume probably that with Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket, that has changed. But, you know, at the time, there was just a lot of unhappiness with the president. The issues that resonated.
Why?
Yeah, so Gaza, I mean, was okay. was just top of mind among the students I talked to. I mean, that kind of like took up like well over half of the conversation. Abortion was a big part of it. And then the other kind of side piece that I think has faded and isn't particularly important was, you know, Jeff Jackson. Remember the vote earlier this year to ban TikTok? And, you know, as we've talked about, TikTok is very important to Gen Z. It's where they get their news. I mean, they spend so much time on it, and they felt that was a very hypocritical vote. I don't think that's really going to last in terms of any kind of importance on the election, but it was those three things were a big deal.
In that report, you compared chasing Gen Z voters to sweeping water uphill. What does that mean?
It means that you constantly have to be doing it. You constantly have to be putting in the work to get them to vote. You know, North Carolina, we should say, I mean, our youth turnout rate is pretty good compared to the rest of the country. I think in 2022, we were about 14th best. But UNC Charlotte, for instance, it's a tougher environment. I was looking at some of the voting numbers there. If you go back to the 2018 midterms, I think they had about 1,200 people total vote in that election, the blue wave. And then in the 2022 midterms, I think about 700 people total turned out in that precinct, a big drop. And then I looked at the primary back in March. Now, again, it was an uncontested primary. That's a big caveat. But only like 78 people came out to vote. Really low.
You mentioned
one of the things you have to remember on a college campus is many of those students still have their home listed as where they, you know, live, which is, of course, frustrating to college professors because you live here 9 months out of the year. You should be voting here, we think. But the truth is many of them still need to learn not just how to register to vote, but how to do a mail-in ballot and get their votes back home to the precincts that they are actually registered in.
You mentioned when you spoke to this group of students at UNC Charlotte, Steve, that they were very lukewarm on Biden. That has probably changed in some way with the ascension of Kamala Harris to the top of the ticket. Any idea how the change, how the selection of J.D. Vance as Donald Trump's vice president might have affected these young voters?
I am just going to speculate, Mike, in that, you know, I guess in theory, I mean, Vance is very young. I mean, how old is Vance? 39? Is that right? Anyway, but I don't think among college students who are in the center or left of center, I don't think selecting Vance will move them one way or the other. I don't
Scott or Jasmine, do you have a theory on that or any hard evidence on that? Neither of you? Okay, fine.
Well, you know, you got to remember, again, I think as one of your intros alluded to, people often can't name the current lieutenant governor. Well, they can in North Carolina right now, but they can't name, you know, their representative. People are just learning about J.D. Vance. And so, you know, people that, you know, don't spend their lives paying attention to politics are just learning about him in trickles. But those pieces of information that are coming out are not going to be the type of things that Gen Z voters are going to feel comfortable with. They grew up, you know, again, as Jasmine pointed out, learning how to avoid getting shot in school. And J.D. Vance just last week said, well, school shootings are just a fact of life. And that is not something that is going to win over a Gen Z voter.
Our producer, Gabe Altieri, reminds me that J.D. Vance is 40. It's Jack Benny who is 39, but who remembers that? Many, many older Americans saw the election of the nation's first black president as a watershed moment. Some viewed Barack Obama's election as hopeful. Others felt threatened by it, and the results of that seems to be lingering in some circles. But Gen Zers weren't even teens when Barack Obama was elected. They had little experience with which to judge the importance of a black president to American history. Does that, Jasmine, make them even more open to a female president? No big deal? And if so, could this be the group that gives Vice President Harris the edge?
I will be completely honest. I haven't heard one of my peers be like, oh my goodness, she's a woman. Can a woman be president? Like, no one is asking that. I think we are like, just like, oh, cool. It's Vice President Harris. Like, we know her a little bit. And so it doesn't feel like the shock that I remember teachers and pastors and community members having around President Obama. Like, yes, you will see an article that speaks about her heritage and about her gender every now and then, but like, by and large, the young people are worried about her politics more than anything about her identity, even with her being an HBCU grad. So,
This is kind of off the topic, Scott, but I'm just curious because I haven't really heard a lot of talk about her gender being a factor in this. Is that because Hillary Clinton has already marched through that field and broken down the weeds, so to speak?
Well, over the years, we have been increasing in every state the number of women who are representatives in the state and holding higher office. We're sliding backwards in South Carolina at the moment. But in most states, people are seeing more and more women leaders. And Hillary Clinton did start banging on that glass ceiling. And now the Gen Zers see no reason why a woman can't break through the ultimate glass ceiling.
Steve.
Yeah, I think if you go back to her acceptance speech at the DNC, Vice President Harris's speech was really tailored toward boomers and Gen X. Like the references to being the first woman or just to gender in general were really stripped out of the speech. I mean, they did, you know, in the Hillary Clinton speech in 2016, it was a big part of the message. And so her speechwriters or the vice president herself really took that away. I mean, they also took away a lot of references to race. They just ran her as a typical candidate. And I think they decided that, you know, focusing on the first that which she is just wasn't what they were going to do.
Steve, Gen Z is among, as one of you mentioned, the most diverse in American history. Nearly 50% are racial and ethnic minorities. One in four, 25%, identify as Hispanic. They grew up witnessing the legalization of same-sex marriage. 16% of them identify as part of the LGBTQ plus community. And they're also shifting, even eschewing, gender norms more than any previous generation, at least according to Britannica, which is a website that used to be the Encyclopedia Britannica. More than half say that forms and profiles that you have to fill out when you apply for things should allow for sex and gender options other than man or woman. So are these things that the MAGA movement is trying to drive from the culture? And if so, does that put these people out of reach for Republicans, particularly MAGA Republicans?
I think, yeah, Mike, the issues of LGBT issues, I think, are very personal to Gen Z, and that for Gen X, I think in terms of like gay issues, people who are gay, I think every generation knows someone who's gay, et cetera. I don't think that's a big deal. But the issue of kind of like gender identity, transgender, is very personal to Gen Z. It's something in a way that's a little abstract for a lot of Gen X and boomers. All these debates in state legislatures over healthcare for people under 18, sports participation. I think in a way it's very abstract for the people making the laws. But for these younger voters, it is a very big deal because they all know someone. It's just part of their friend group. It's part of their circle. And it is a very red line. It is a very big deal for them.
Well, Jasmine, let me ask you a question posed by Andrew, one of our listeners, who has emailed this question specifically for you, as a matter of fact. Why or what do Gen Z Republicans look like today, Republicans? And how did they arrive at that perspective? It seems like he says the default for Gen Z is to be a little more liberal.
Realistically, I think my work is nonpartisan, right? So I don't have a lot of conversations around party. From my own just experiences being a part of the generation, we were socialized together. And I think that that's an important distinction that we make for like Gen X and how schools were integrated when they started schools. We were socialized together in a very different way. Like, we always brought our identities into the classroom. And so I think for many of us, there is a middle ground that we still can find in conversation, even when that's not seen by the people at the top of the ticket. And I think that Gen Z Republicans do tend to also walk a line where there is a lot more reciprocity with the liberal agenda than maybe generations before.
Scott, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, I've watched over, again, the last couple of decades for, you know, the college Democrats and the college Republicans at the university where I taught, how they've evolved. And I think Jasmine hit the nail on the head. As far as the college Republicans I'm seeing, they don't necessarily reflect what the, you know, boomer and silent generation MAGA group is reflecting. They are honestly a little more policy oriented, even if it's a little vague. In fact, for the past two sets of presidents of the college Democrats and college Republicans, the previous ones and the current ones, they're friends. They, you know, they are not going out and slandering each other. And, you know, what was it a couple of decades ago, affirmative action cookie bakes and things that were just out there to get attention and, you know, make people angry. They're not doing that anymore. So the Gen Z Republicans, of course, there's going to be the tail of the distribution that are extreme, just like the tail of any conservative or liberal distribution, but the majority of them, at least in the college Republicans that I see, are getting along with the college Democrats, even though they fundamentally disagree on some topics. They still recognize this is another human being with whom I very much disagree, but this is somebody who is still a human.
Hope springs eternal. You just heard it here. Jasmine, go ahead.
And I'll just quickly add, like, for many of the students who are actually politically active on a college campus, the hope is that their peers just turn out. Like, that is just, that's the crux of their hope in their work. It's like, people just turn out. Vote with us, don't vote with us, just vote. So that might be a we're seeing too.
Jasmine is HBCU and Campus Program Director for Common Cause North Carolina. Common Cause describes itself as a nonpartisan grassroots organization dedicated to upholding the core values of American democracy by defending the right to vote, limiting big money's influence in our elections, holding public officials accountable, and more. And right now, as we've alluded to in this conversation, a lot of people view democracy as being under attack. Is that how Gen Zers view it? And if so, who do they blame for that?
Not always. And I say not always because we aren't always thinking critically about democracy. I think for us, we just think it's always going to be there. But when we're paying attention and when our parents tell us things and when we really watch the full TikTok video, and we see that we're losing some of our checks and balances in North Carolina between our state court and our state legislature. And we recognize that our United States Supreme Court has the power to take away rights and access with, you know, one decision, they are starting to see that democracy is under attack. I will also say that they are not necessarily pointing fingers the way that we might expect. And part of it is, I think, just a confusion of how do we get here and what do we do now and who is who, and not really having a strong foundation in civics, quite honestly.
Scott, I have read some anecdotal stories in newspapers and articles on the internet that say young people would be okay with less democracy. They'd be okay with a strong man. And that could be because they're naive. It could be because they don't have any experience with what happened in World War II when we fought forces that were authoritarian, etc. Do you think that's true? Or are young people mostly very concerned about keeping their rights in place through a democratic government?
Well, the way they're responding to surveys, and if you dig into the nuance, then what you see is a concern that democracy is in danger, but democracy can be made to work. If you dig into the things where they think are a danger to democracy, that's when you see sort of this you know, group of answers that aren't necessarily always the same. You see people saying, oh, the danger to democracy is the influence of money in politics. It's political polarization. Some people say the danger, or some young people in this poll I'm looking at, say Donald Trump, some say Joe Biden. But the idea is it can be made to work.
Scott Huffman is professor of political science at Winthrop University. He's here with Jasmine Abney with Common Cause North Carolina and Steve Harrison, our WFAE political reporter. When we come back, Steve, I want to talk about where these young people get their news, and it ain't from us. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaOfSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's Politics Monday. We're talking about the influence of Gen Z on the election and the influence of life today on Gen Z and how it reflects it, how it's reflected in their political views, with Dr. Scott Huffman, professor of political science and director of the Center for Public Opinion and Policy Research at Winthrop University, where he conducts the Winthrop Poll, Jasmine Abney, HBCU and Campus Program Director for Common Cause, North Carolina, and Steve Harrison, WFAE's political reporter. Steve, NPR reports, and it's been alluded to in this conversation already, that Gen Z primarily relies on social media for news instead of traditional platforms, which raises questions about how they can be manipulated and how political parties and candidates can break through to them. What are parties and individual campaigns trying to do to reach them on these various platforms?
Yeah, like Mike, you know, we talked about earlier in the show, the Harris campaign, they're running geo-targeted ads on TikTok at college campuses in the swing states. So, you know, if you're in this specific area, you will see this ad show up talking about healthcare. The Harris campaign has really leaned in heavily into memes. You know, they kind of embraced the vice president's kind of quirky side with the coconut tree and Kamala is brat, et cetera. But, you know, to your earlier point, it is really hard to reach these voters. I was visiting my son this weekend, and I noticed not only does does not have cable TV, which isn't a surprise, doesn't even have rabbit ears, right? Like, just doesn't even bother. It's free. It's free TV. And there's no interest in even bringing it into his house. So, you know, that would surprise me a bit. And so, yeah, I mean, very hard to find him.
It's the end of network television as we know it. Jasmine, I'm going to wag my old finger at you and say, looky here, you. It is very difficult for older people to understand why Gen Zers have turned their backs on traditional media. It's not just the networks. It's the newspapers and even big outlets like the New York Times. I mean, they'll read little snippets from the Times on their social media feed, but they won't read the paper. They won't read the articles. Should that concern this turning toward non-traditional sources for their news be offset by the realization that these people have grown up with social media and perhaps may have greater sophistication in using it and understanding how to use it and remove the wheat from the chaff, so to speak? Or am I making a silk purse out of a sow's ear here?
I think that, yes, we are much more sophisticated in using social media. I think social media is where we're native, but there are a lot of things that drive us away from reading New York Times. And like, I totally understand we need funds, but also they don't want to pay the dollar to read the articles. Like they're not doing that. They don't really have the time or the interest to sit in front of the TV and watch reporters go back and forth for an hour and a half. What we do have time for outside of TikToks is like podcasts and like those quick hits of media. And that is another place where it's people are getting their news from are like podcasts and tuning into who you want to hear.
Let me ask you a question about that, because podcasts can be long. They can be 30 minutes or more. Is that because they can stop and start them? They can go away and come back?
Yes, absolutely. Being able to have it with you, the convenience aspect, the fact that it's a cute little app on your phone and you can switch out the people all the time, anytime. And there are also some short form news podcasts that are 20 minutes or less that they do tend to like listen to. And so I think that that also helps. But yeah, they're super savvy for the most part. I think that even in the nonpartisan space, like we are constantly trying to give great quality, simple, easy to digest information to kind of help weed out the confusing bits that still come through via social media. But I think students do a great job of like finding strong quality resources and sticking to them.
So Steve, Americans under 43 years old are expected to make up nearly half of the electorate this time around. This is a group that overwhelmingly votes Democrat, not because of self-identification necessarily, but because of issues. In our state, how much of the electorate do those under 43 and therefore Gen Zers comprise, and how might they influence not just the presidential choice, but the choices they face for governor, for Congress, for attorney general, for that matter?
So I would assume, and I mean, I don't have the exact stats for North Carolina in front of me. I would assume North Carolina is mirroring the country pretty close in terms of the share of voters under 43. One of the big things in North Carolina is that the younger you are, the more likely you are to be an unaffiliated voter, and the more likely you are not to even check a box when you register for your race or ethnicity. So a lot of these young voters are really hard to peg in terms of who they are. I mean, it's just when you look at the voter file, they're a bit of a mystery.
Scott.
Well, in addition to the age, you have to look at the location. So you have to look at how in-migration into especially the state of North Carolina is affecting things. Folks are moving into North Carolina for jobs, and it usually is people under 45, and they are moving to urban areas, making those areas more blue and younger. And where there is out-migration in North Carolina and other southern states, it is out of red areas, leaving those areas even more conservative, but with fewer people and an aging population. So it's not just where, you know, what the youth believe and how many of them there are, it's where they are, where they're moving to, and the impacts they have on those more urban areas. And of course, that plays into the big national picture of the states, because we don't elect a president via popular election, which we all know. So it's where they are actually moving to as well as anything else.
So NPR did this big article on Gen Zers. And in that article, they say young people, although they gravitate toward voting Democratic aren't identifying, as we just said, they aren't necessarily identifying as Democrats or as Republicans. In fact, they quote Republican political strategist John Brabender as saying, quote, the Democrats don't own these votes. They're renting them. There is still an open door, but that door is not going to be open forever. If that's true, given the issues that appear to be top of mind for these young voters, how do Republicans, Scott, snag and retain them?
Well, they really need to latch on to the parts of the economy that Gen Zers are most worried about. When you look at broad polls of the entire American electorate and you ask, you know, who would be better at this issue, Kamala Harris or Donald Trump? A lot of times the Republican, Donald Trump, wins on who would be better with the economy. So that's not necessarily true of Gen Zers, but if you can hone in on the parts of the economy and the parts of personal rights that Gen Zers are worried about, then Republicans really can dig into that. But to the degree that, you know, folks on the far right are denying them and their peers the right to express their own identity and their own views as they see fit, they're going to alienate them.
Steve, I would imagine that the impact of Gen Z on this upcoming election will be dependent on their turnout in numbers. And the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement shows that in 2018, the youth vote turnout rate in North Carolina was 25.8%. That's up from 16.2% in 2014. But in 2022, it was down just a little to 23.1%. Do we know how that is likely to change in this election cycle? Any signs that we can read? Any tea leaves?
I think the tea leaves would be that now, of course, for the presidential year in 2024, that percent number will be much, much higher because we have larger turnout overall. I think the biggest tea leaf is that with now Vice President Harris at the top of the ticket, I think there's at least an opportunity to come close to matching the youth turnout in 2020. You know, North Carolina, in terms of young people voting, is relatively high. There are other states that have higher turnout, and some of them tend to make it easier to vote. Michigan basically automatically registers everyone. You know, when you go get your driver's license, they register you automatically. In North Carolina, you can pre-register when you're 16 and 17, which is a big deal. But Michigan, you know, goes even farther and just puts you on the rolls. Other states mail everyone ballots. But I think in North Carolina, it's not particularly hard to vote through early voting, through same day registration. I think there are plenty of opportunities for Gen Z to vote and be registered here.
Jasmine, as Steve reported when he talked to UNC Charlotte students, they were really, really lukewarm on President Biden when he was still in the race. Well, he's not in the race. Kamala Harris is in the race. And there seems to be, anecdotally, and if you watch the videos that you see on the television news, there seems to be a lot of, you don't watch television news, I know, but that's okay. There seems to be a lot of excitement among particularly young people about her candidacy. Is that because she's young? Is it because she's a black woman? Is it because she seems to be closer in age to them and therefore more relatable? Is it because she's seen dancing on TikTok? What's the appeal here that President Biden didn't have?
I think we are always excited about people who we resonate with, who we see parts of ourselves within. And I think we've just seen so much of Vice President Harris just being a person, whether she was cooking or she was talking about her nieces or her sister or her college experience. And I think that that's really helped people feel like they know something about her. And I think that's why we've seen such a push to talk more about policy also, just because we know her as a person.
Scott, Steve was just talking about how in Michigan, when you get your driver's license at 18, you are registered to vote automatically. And perhaps that explains why Michigan and Pennsylvania are among the states with the highest voter turnout. In Michigan, it's 37%, and Pennsylvania, it's 32%. That's the youth vote turnout. These are two key battleground states. If young people turn out in similar numbers or higher numbers, who does that help? Who could, and could that help swing this election in one direction or another, particularly in swing states where youth voter turnout is high.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Again, as we said at the top of the hour, younger voters, Gen Z, are leaning more Democratic than they are Republican. So, you know, again, it just becomes a game of mathematics. If enough of them turn out in the key states, then yes, the Democrats can win this election. But, you know, as Steve pointed out, it's easier to register. It's easier to turn out in some states than it is in others. In Arizona, they got a law through the courts that's going to make it a little tougher. And, you know, the fact is, I believe Arizona went for Biden by, I think, 0.6 percentage points, less than a percentage point. So it does come down to tiny numbers and the ability to turn out in the election.
So if the Berkeley Institute of Young Americans, which I quoted at the very beginning of the program, is right, saying that young people had broad, decisive impact on the midterms of the last several times, and that young voters believe that society is fractured and that government has a role to play, does that put the Republican Party at a disadvantage with these voters, given their long-standing desire to reduce the influence of the federal government, Scott?
Well, for one thing, I think that might overestimate the amount of change that came from Gen Z in the midterm elections. A lot of what we saw in the midterm election of 2022 came from over expectations of Republicans. And frankly, it's because of poll aggregators relying on a handful of really bad leaning polls that I won't mention on the air that made it.
Why
seem
not?
Like
go ahead. Mention them.
That there was going to be a red wave that did not appear. Now, yes, Gen Zers were important, but they were not the overwhelming element that kept the red wave in 2022 from being as large as it was. But I mean, as we're seeing here, they're becoming more and more important to every election. But you know, you could be fishing in a pond full of fish, but if you don't have the right bait, you're not catching any.
Steve, no Republican presidential candidate has won over young voters since 1988. And it hasn't been close since Al Gore beat George W. Bush by 2 points in 2000. However, this year, in June, prior to both conventions, the New York Times Siena poll had Democrats ahead of Trump by only 2 points, 47-45% among voters 18 to 29, the Gen Zers. Do we know how that might have changed and what was making Trump attractive, so attractive to these young voters?
Yeah, Mike, I was looking at, before we got on the show, U.S. News did a survey of young voters, and not all of the seven swing states, but many of them, and they had Harris up by 30 points over Trump in those. And then if they kind of did the same poll before, and at that point, Biden was only ahead by 18. So I think there's been some real evidence that there's been movement toward the vice president among young voters. And as we've talked about, these states are so close.
Yeah.
They're so close. It is important.
Well, a recent NBC News poll, Jasmine, shows Vice President Harris with a significant lead over Donald Trump among young people likely to vote. Half of Gen Z voters say they will vote for Harris. One third say they will vote for Trump. Does that comport with what you are seeing on the ground and in your peer group?
Unfortunately, when I'm on the ground, all of my conversations are nonpartisan. Just like, are you going to go vote? What's your plan to vote? Do you have a voter? Do you have a photo ID that you can show at the precinct? But from what I see online and from what I'm hearing, people have been talking a lot more about Vice President Harris than they've been talking about former President Trump. So
I have 30 seconds, Scott. That same poll, the NBC News poll, shows that 80% of Gen Z voters who identify as Democrat or Republican say they will vote for their party's candidate. Among Gen Z independents, the vote is evenly divided. By a whopping 34% of young independents say they won't vote at all. From a pollster's point of view, what does that tell you in terms of how parties can reach these independent voters? 30 seconds.
Well, a lot of the problem is young voters and increasingly a number of Americans don't trust the parties anymore. They don't like the two-party system. They don't understand that because of our Constitution, we are literally stuck with a two-party system. But they don't like the parties. They don't believe that the parties are out to make this country better.
Scott Huffman is a professor of political science and director of the Center for Public Opinion and Policy Research at Winthrop University. Jasmine Abney is HBCU and Campus Program Director for Common Cause North Carolina. And Steve Harrison is WFAE's political reporter. None of us are Gen Z, except for Jasmine. Thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.